From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is your Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk nuance. Slight changes, whether they're old or new, can make a huge difference. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, Kathy and Ross, I have some beeves that I need to settle with you. I don't really, nor do I have any beefs that I need to settle with the two of you. You're lovely and I love talking to you, but we do need to talk about some beefs today.
Fletcher, this was really interesting because we were talking about this, Kathy and I, and a long time ago, and we're going to go into this, the plural of beef was technically beeves. And we were both, wow, that's really interesting. And we both asked our respective spouses, did you know about beeves? Both of them are foodies and both instantly did. So now we have a question
for
you.
Well, actually, I'm going to interject though, Rose. The thing that got me, and I think the same thing happened with slides, Randy looked at me like I was insane. It was like, you know, of course.
And that's the question for you, Fletcher. Did you know the old plural of beef?
No. If you had asked me what's the old plural of beef besides like meat or something, I would have said beeves. But that's only because, you know, it has the V. I mean, you know, sometimes we change an F into a V. But
right.
No, I definitely, I did not know. That is the answer to your question. No, I didn't.
Perfect.
Good. You're with us. You're one of us, Fletcher.
And before we go any further, nowadays, people would basically say the plural is beef.
Beef, right. Beef. The plural of beef is beef. Yeah.
Right.
Unless you're talking about arguments. Can you have beefs?
Yes.
Yeah, you actually, you're right. I have a beef about that. We've had many beefs about that.
Yeah.
You're right. Then you would say beefs. But then now, the one thing is the plural beeves was mainly used when it was applied to the animal, like an ox.
Oh, you wouldn't,
it wasn't like you'd say, we have many cuts of beeves here.
Mm-mm.
You would say there are many beeves in the field.
Okay, instead of cows or bulls or ox or oxen.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing that we're going to discuss today is that problem with the plural. What happened? Why did the F change to V? And does this normally happen? And sometimes it does. Like, Fletcher, what's the plural of half?
Halves.
Wow. Good, Fletcher.
Thank you.
Let's quickly go through these. Thief.
Thieves.
Loaf.
Loaves.
Wolf.
Wolves. There's a pattern.
Knife.
Yeah.
Knife. Yeah, there's a pattern. Knives. Right. And leaf.
Leaves.
Right. This is one thing, interesting enough, we have a problem in Canada here. Particularly my wife is a rabid
sports fan. Oh, the maple leaves, right?
The maple leaves. But the reason it's not leaves there, because we're talking about plural of a club, which is maple leaf. So therefore, we're not talking about a lot of leaves. We're talking about a lot of maple leaves. So it's different. But I'm going to ask you just quickly, what's the plural of chief?
Not chiefs. I guess they are chiefs, aren't they?
Right. What's the plural of cliff?
Cliffs.
Reef?
I guess reefs, yeah.
Right. Stiff?
Stiff.
Dead people. Stiff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so what's going on here? In one case, why does the V change to F? In another case, why does it not do so? Can you give us a quick etymological, grammatical reason why this is occurring? It's really kind of cool.
Why they're different? No, I really have no idea why they're different. I mean, I can imagine, you know, an F turning into a V as things are, you know, just the way people are saying things. But unless they are like from different backgrounds, I don't know why one would be F and one would be V.
No, it's a problem, actually. But when we do an F, it's called a fricative consonant. We basically kind of close our mouth a little bit and pass air through it. Like, say F, you've got to go F. Then what we do sometimes is if we make F a little bit, we use our vocal cords, the F becomes a V. Fa. Now try to make that same thing and then go with a little bit back into your vocal cords, it becomes a V. And what happened with like things like life and wife and loaf and wolves is something called in Old English it happened, is called intervocalic voicing. In other words, when you make the plural with an S, the F, you kind of like vibrate your vocal cords, the F becomes a V. Is that clear?
Yeah.
And in Old English, the half was actually, to make a plural in Old English, you put an AS in front. Basically, in Old English, you added, to these words, you added an AS. As soon as you add the AS, you've got a vowel on each side of that consonant, or two consonants. There's basically, with half, thief, all of those words, there's a vowel on each side of the of that consonant. When you add the AS or ES in more modern English. That makes the F automatically go, in some cases, to a V. And that was called intervocalic voicing. The F is now pronounced lower in your with your vocal cords. So that happened all the time. Okay, but what happened with chief, beliefs, all of that? What was going on there? Chiefs, it's not chiefs. No, it never has been chiefs. Couple of things happened. First of all, I mean, Old English is what's called inflected Latin. There are all sorts of declensions, all sorts of different endings that you would put onto words. And in the old days, the ones that with the half thief that had the AS were of a certain type of word, and they took an AS ending. Other words took like a U ending to make a plural. You wouldn't say cliff. To make a plural of cliff, you would have clivu, or you would use a U, not an AS. But when the Normans took over, the Normans said, hey, we don't like all these weird endings. We're going to kind of stick with one, and that's going to be like in French, S or ES. So the ES words, like loaf and all those, they kept the same, that intervocalic switch. But words like cliff, which had the U, they kind of dropped the U, and they just added a straight S. So therefore, you didn't have that other vowel on the other side, so it'd be pronounced cliffs.
Oh, wow.
And then in other cases, like the word chief, which we never have pronounced chiefs, chief is a French word, came in from the Normans. And the Normans, well, it was actually chef. And you well know chef is the same thing.
Sure.
The Normans said, you add an S to it, and it's chefs. Mm-hmm. And that's what the English did. And then chiefs came into being, so it became chiefs. And then other times, just to make things really bad, we have things like wharf, calf, and hoof. It could be hoofs, it could be calves, it could be wharfs. In that case, people just bottled backwards and they said, I don't like wharfs. We're going to stick with the good old French Norman way and just add an S and get rid of the V.
Holy moly.
You got it?
I think I do, actually, yeah.
A better example would be staff and staves. Staff used to be staves in the old English pronunciation, but then they go, bag it, let's do the Frenchie. Let's just add an S to staffs. So that's what happened.
So we say usually the F changes to V. Sometimes it doesn't. It depends. But this is the one. I think we might have touched on this in the past.
But it's
what
fun.
What is the plural of dwarf?
Oh, right. Dwarf. We have touched on this in the past because it used to be dwarfs, right? And then,
correct.
And then J.R.R. Tolkien came along and said, no, I like dwarves better. And
precisely.
Use dwarves, and then everybody started doing that. Is that it?
Exactly. Very well put. But the thing that we really like, if he were going to really be historical with his plural, because he was being very linguistic, because that was his thing, but it should have been dwaros.
Dwaros.
What?
Dwaros. And he wrote about this, which I loved. Shortly after The Hobbit came out, he decided to use the term dwarves instead of dwarfs. But he said, no reviewer commented that they used the term dwarfs when they reviewed his books, but he always did, quote, incorrect dwarves. But he said it's just a piece of private bad grammar, rather shocking in a philologist. But I'll have to go on with it. But he said perhaps the real historical plural of dwarf, like teeth is the plural of tooth, is dwaros. He's a rather a nice word, but a bit too archaic. Still, I rather wish I had used the word dwaro. I love that.
I know, I do too. I love that.
Oh, wow.
And Fletcher, we just gave you that little lesson in Old English. Let's see elf. What elf is a declension, like we said earlier, where it made the plural with an AS that later changed to an ES. So what is the correct original plural, what would we say, elfs or elves? Should it be?
Well, I guess elves.
Perfect. You got it.
Do you say elfs, though? I'm just trying to think. I know everything now when you talk about orcs and dwarves and such comes from pretty much from Tolkien. Do you say, I think that you always see elves. I don't mm-hmm. think you ever see elves, do you, anymore?
I don't. I think you see elves completely.
The word I always have a problem with is when I'm doing a crossword puzzle and the answer is elfin or is it elven? Mm-hmm. I always have a problem remembering if it's supposed to be elfin or elven. Are they, mm-hmm. I mean, elfin is usually what it ends up with, but is elven a word or am I just thinking of like Elvis?
I thought technically it should be elven is what I thought.
Really? Well, see,
okay.
Here's...
To me, it means to me, and I've got to look it up. I have elfin in my head is like an elf. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're sort of like sprightly and mm-hmm. I don't know, gamine-ish. Whereas to me, elven seems more like something that the elves do. Like it's an elvish thing.
Oh,
I don't
like
know
an...
now. Elven.
I just looked at it here. Here, everyone's on Stack Exchange in English. Everyone's saying it should be the V.
What?
Oh, no. See, I'm saying that it was J.R.R. again, did it? The adjective elven was popularized. This is the OED by the writings of J.R.R. Tolkien.
That's interesting.
Well, I feel fully justified in always having a problem with that in a crossword puzzle now because it doesn't
yep,
sound
we
like
are having a problem with it, too. Oh, one interesting little minor fact is Kathy was saying Duero, and actually Gandalf talks about the mines of Moria as being mm-hmm. Duero Dwelf. So he did use it at least one time.
Duero Dwelf.
Yeah.
Dwelf, Delf, Delf.
Duero Delf, yeah.
I'm with the Normans on this one, okay?
Okay, now, Fletcher, we're going to go into another aspect, synonyms that aren't. These are words that people often use interchangeably, but they actually mean different things.
Okay, sort of like amused and bemused, which we've talked about before.
Right, we have. Sometimes,
very good, yeah.
Very good, Fletcher. Sometimes these are nuanced, and we're going to see if you can get away from these nuances and tell us which synonyms are fake or why they are fake.
Okay, sure.
First, redundant and repetitive. What's the diff?
Oh, okay. Something is repetitive, that means it, well, I mean, it's repeated over and over, right? It's the same thing repeated over and over. Redundant, it's unnecessary because something else exists like it.
Perfect.
I really like the origin of redundant because it comes from Latin unda, which is a wave. And it basically means everything is like, it's overflowing. It's too much.
There's too much.
It's sort of cool.
We don't need all that.
Yeah. Covering with a flood of water or something.
It's funny, though, because what I always think of is like, you know, the tongue-in-cheek department of redundancy department. So to me, in my head, I always do think of it more as a repeated. I know it's technically.
I agree with you, Kathy.
Just unnecessary. But I do think of it as a repeated thing.
I know. I do, too. But it's not. It should be more.
No, I know.
No.
Well, it's not necessary.
And actually, I'm going to ask you a question, Fletcher, quickly. Can you think of other redundant words? I just gave you one. Can you give me one other?
No, I can't. Tell me more.
Well, inundate.
Inundate. Oh, okay.
Which would make sense. But other ones are weird that I didn't really think about this, but abound.
Oh.
Surround.
Really?
Yeah. And when you think about it, like around, you know, getting water around and stuff, it's sort of cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Inundate, fill it all with water.
Yeah.
I like the word. It's undare.
Yeah.
I like how that sounds.
I do too.
The next one I thought was really interesting. Do you know the difference between a graveyard and a cemetery?
Oh, wow. Well, no, but let me guess.
Okay.
I mean,
let's move on.
Well, I've never thought about it before. But is, let's see, a graveyard could be a place where they put bodies. A cemetery is where all the headstones are too, and people go and remember.
No,
this was really interesting. Kathy found this one, and I never really thought of it. Graveyard is specifically a smaller burial site attached to a church.
Oh, okay.
And cemetery is any large burial ground. The weird thing is cemetery is an older word. It comes from Roman times. But I think graveyard was probably more used until cemeteries became a big thing after, you know, people were buried in mass amounts with lots of people dying and being born. So I thought that was an interesting distinction. Okay, the next one is sort of interesting as well. Capacious and large.
Okay. Capacious means there's a lot of room to hold a lot of stuff. And
good.
Large is just big.
You got it.
Really good. That's
very
right. You're good.
Good
at this. Yeah.
I've never thought about that one either. But capacious sounds like capacity. And so I assumed that was where we were headed with that.
You got it. It's really good, Fletcher.
That's one of those words. Capacious, I just like saying. It's just one of those beautiful words to me.
I'm the exact opposite. I don't like it.
No?
It sounds to me sort of unnecessary. I think I would say spacious for like a house. And I would say for like a jar, there's a lot of room in it or something. I don't know.
I don't know, like a capacious. I like capacious. It's so capacious.
I don't know. It sounds affected to me a little bit.
Well, what can I say? This one, Ross wanted. I was still against it, Ross. Obtuse versus abstruse.
Oh, man. Right. Okay. Obtuse.
But I'm going to interject. Ross was right to put it in because I realized that I was wrong about obtuse.
I think Ross was right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So if you're being obtuse, you're being kind of blockheaded or stubborn.
Good.
Abstruse. Is abstruse something that's hard to understand?
Close. Pretty close, actually.
Yeah, I would say. Okay.
It's remote from comprehension is one of the literal definitions.
Uh-huh.
It's hidden away. It comes from the Latin, and it's hidden away, concealed, secret.
But it's, pretty much used just to mean something's tough to understand. It's
it's hard to grasp.
Right.
Yeah.
Very good. The trudere, the Latin for abstruse is trudere. It comes from the initial word to thrust or push. The ab is away, to thrust away. You can't find it. You can't find the meaning.
See, now, I've always used obtuse much more kindly. I always thought it more meant, remember we talked about this, that when you said, and I said we shouldn't put it in, and then you said, what does obtuse mean? And I said something incorrect. I thought it was more like not obfuscatory, but like vaguely not stupid, but vague.
Oh.
Or thick. Oh. I did not use it to mean like dim-witted or in the insulting way. I always thought of obtuse as like something that's just sort of too largely not sharp, but in a way of understanding. Like,
oh,
it's
an obtuse
point.
Oh, so now you understand why when you call the waiter obtuse, he hit you.
So much for the soup down my back, right?
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. When you said that, I didn't get that you had that.
So I had the kind of idea, but I didn't realize it was an insult.
No, you might say the meaning was abstruse to you in that sense.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. This one I think was interesting. Kathy, you said again, this one didn't interest you. You didn't think there was a problem with this.
No, I kind of got it.
Okay. This is what I never thought about. When I think about it, it does become so, but poisonous versus venomous.
Okay. Well, certainly if I eat something and it kills me, then it's poisonous. If something bites me and it kills me, then it's venomous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got it perfectly.
I found it interesting that venomous apparently initially, at least the earliest recorded use, was figurative. It wasn't like the snake biting you, venomous. It was something morally affecting you.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Oh, interesting.
Well, the really, really early usages were much more like a charm or a seduction or a potion.
Uh-huh.
And then from there it became like a bad potion.
We do kind of use them interchangeably when we're talking about snakes or spiders or something, right?
Yeah. But I think in that sense, though, it's correct because the spider contains a poison. So it is correct in that sense. In a way, this is one of those tricky ones where it's kind of interchangeable in many cases.
The next one is one that Ross and I have written about in the past, in a couple of our books, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's really commonly, I think, confused. It's barter versus haggle.
I do have to guess. If I have to guess, which I do, bartering is like, I will trade you this if you give me that. Like, I'll give you whatever. I'll give you this jug of maple syrup if you give me that cow. Mm-hmm. Haggling is like, I want your cow and I want to pay you $10 for it, and you want me to pay you $20 for it, and I'm going to talk you down to $14.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is that
perfect.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that
can we just for a second, let's. I hate it when people say this, but let's put a pin in haggle and barter, and go back to poisonous and venomous when we're talking about something not literal, so not actual poison or venom. If you talk about like somebody's venomous actions or invective or something, then that is very like outwardly directed, right? They are spitting that at you, or they are obviously being destructive. If something is poisonous, then that says more to me like it kind of eats you away from the inside.
I agree with you. It's more insidious. Yeah. It's like getting in there, whereas the other is like,
which is actually the case, because that is the real distinction. Because a venomous, I think, would be you're using it for something, and poisonous could be inside of you and not using it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although that's the only problem with that, though, is poisonous comes from the Latin potio, which is a drink.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it sort of does have like you're giving it out to someone too. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying, though. I agree with you guys.
You drink it, and it tears you up inside, right?
Yeah, that's good too. You're right.
I see it more as like poisonous is more or behind the scenes, whereas venomous is someone's out there like hissing and showing their fangs.
Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. I have the same feeling. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we can jump back to barter and haggle. What were you starting to say?
Oh, this is something that I thought was interesting, is that both barter and haggle come from like sort of like dubious beginnings. Haggle, among the meanings of haggle initially, was to hack, mangle, and mutilate.
Oh, no.
Like, whoa.
Okay. If you wanted my cow and you threatened to hack, mangle, or mutilate me, that would talk me down in price, I think.
But it is true. You're hacking at the price. So I think it does work in that sense.
Oh, I guess so, yes.
Yeah.
And Kath, barter, too, is a bad.
Yeah, barter was traffic or trade, exchanging a commodity, but it also meant to have sexual intercourse.
Oh, wow.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
My, that's traffic or trading, exchanging a commodity.
An exchange of goods, yeah.
But one interesting thing with those two, though, is technically you can haggle. We have like one definition is barter is basically without money exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Haggle is you're negotiating about a new price and you're trying to like haggle a bit. But I would think you could haggle while you're bartering. I'll give you two cows for that car. And you go, I want three cows. In a way, you're haggling there, aren't you, technically?
You're negotiating. But haggle, I thought, technically meant cash. I thought that
we were talking about. Yeah. But the idea really is you're negotiating, too. So in a way, does it have to be completely cash or not? I don't know.
I actually agree with you. I think that they should allow it because you're right. It's like you go, I'm going to write you, Kathy, an incredible book if you give me your cow.
Yeah.
And I go, I want two books. I'm haggling while we barter.
Yeah. Although bartering might be just because the bartering technically definition says involves a trade of equal value without money being exchanged. But that depends on your definition. Is it equal value or not?
Right.
I think we're haggling over what's the...
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I think my cow's worth more than one stupid book.
Yeah. I think my cow is so good. I think you should write me 10 books.
You said incredible book, Kathy. You said you were going to write an incredible book.
We're in a jam. Sorry.
Actually, that's jelly? Not that funny. That's true. I mean, we'll
versus
talk about
jam.
It.
Versus
jam. Okay. Jelly versus jam versus preserves versus... Is it right that jam has pieces of the fruit in it and jelly doesn't? Is that pretty much the difference?
Pretty much.
But when Kathy said we're in a jam, she was actually not being silly because jam, the original origin does come from pressing objects close together. In effect, crushing fruit into a preserve. Yeah.
Jamming it into the jar.
Yeah, jamming it into the jar. So she was completely right on the money on that one.
I'm curious. Jam session, I'm seeing, started in 35. Why jam? Oh, because everybody was like playing at the same time?
Yeah, I guess they're jamming the music together.
Or jammed up all together into one room.
That would make sense. Yeah, I just suddenly saw that and thought.
You certainly wouldn't call it a jelly session, tell you that.
But that could be well preserved.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, here's one, Fletcher, that I didn't actually really think about this until we read it. Autobiography versus memoir.
I have wondered about this because it seems like we just call everything a memoir now, and there are no more autobiographies. Does a memoir just pick out like a certain period of time in your life, and an autobiography like is supposed to cover your entire life?
That's
pretty good.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah, because an autobiography, you're going, I was born, and this is what happened to me, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, and like a memoir, here are the things that I remember.
Or here are the things I want to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's less chronological, if you will. I think it's a little more essay-y. Don't you think, Ross?
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
This one, do you want to do this one? College versus university.
Yeah, this is confusing. Yeah, let's do this one. A lot of this depends on where you are, too.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say we're in the U.S. Usually there are like multiple colleges within a university. So like a university is a collection of colleges, right? The college is just a school of something. And you put a lot of those together and you get a university which covers all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one gets really messy. That's pretty much it. But then like in Canada, there's a different thing. Colleges usually are shorter, more practical programs. You get like a certificate. Universities tend to be bachelor's, master's degree, focus on research and academic study. But even there, you go back to your definition too, because like it gets really annoying because there's a one of the colleges of University of Toronto is St. Michael's College. So the official name of it is University of St. Michael's College, which I think is really confusing to me.
University of St. Michael's College?
Yes.
Oh, weird.
It's really weird. And it's a Federated College of the University of Toronto, which is just like utterly confusing to me.
And well, it should be.
And I think all of these words are confusing for that reason, too.
The one thing, I mean, in Spanish, colegio is usually a school. You got the universidad, the university, but colegio, which would be college, is usually up to secondary school.
We also have that in Canada.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, and it's usually private. It's not, escuela is more likely to be used for a public school, whereas colegio would be a private or religious, school, Catholic school, which there are many. But yeah, it's funny having moved here, because Ross, you used to always talk about university, and I always said college. I went to college. I have a college degree. Mm-hmm. But now, being in Europe, I'm so used to hearing university, and not the, either, to university.
It's like going to college.
It sounds normal now, yeah.
Yeah, I say now going to university, and people look at me like if I'm in the States, like, what are you talking about? But yeah.
Yeah. No, it's interesting.
But there's that distinction. But I think this is one of those ones that it's really kind of a synonym, kind of not a cinnamon. I just say
cinnamon bun.
Cinnamon bun. It depends on where you are and what your reference is. And I think it's really confusing any way you do it.
Well, what else would you say? Higher education?
No. Or I could go, I went to University of St. Michael's, University College, whatever. I get really confused.
Ah.
Let's go to this one here, Kath. Actually, Fletcher, we have a question for you. CV versus resume.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, the CV is much more detailed, right? You put all sorts of stuff on your CV that you wouldn't put on your resume.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Like what? Like if I, what would I put on my CV that I probably wouldn't put on my resume?
Your spelling championships.
My spelling, yeah. Okay, that's fair. Maybe like awards and that you've won or speaking engagements you've had.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that we're seeing is that resumes tend to be shorter. It's more of a summary. A CV, especially you do a lot about your academic background, whatever you did, which the one thing that got me is it seems to me, I'm curious, I'm going to ask both of you, I rarely used to see the word CV used.
I always see it now.
And I see it constantly now. Yeah.
But we're wondering, is that because we're overseas or is that a trend in the States? And we're also not looking for a job. So we're just wondering, is CV being used a lot or is it recent or not?
I think it's being used a lot more, and I don't think people actually mean it when they say they want your CV. I think what they want is your resume.
Your resume. But now, let's say I'm looking for a job in the States right now.
Yeah.
And I go, I gotta write my CV. Would that sound weird or not?
I think it depends on who you were talking to. Most people would understand, everybody would understand resume. Some people would understand CV, and more people would understand CV than would have understood it a few decades ago, I think.
Okay.
I have another question for both of you. When you write the word resume, do you write it as resume or do you use the little accent?
I write it as resume.
Yeah, I do write it as resume. I also get really confused when I see it written and I don't know exactly whether people, especially if they're talking about plural, when it says resumes and there's no accent.
Resumes.
I'm like, wait, what is going on? Oh, it's supposed to be resumes. Uh-huh. Even though I wouldn't write it, I would not put the accent on myself either.
No, I wouldn't either.
The one that drives me crazy is when people put both the accent on the E and the other E.
I know, I hate
that. That's when I really do get a little irritated.
Actually, that's one where they should just spell it R-E-S-U-M-A-Y, I think.
Yeah,
probably
right,
be the better way to do it. But I would try it. I think you'd be in trouble.
And then the plural should have a V in it.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.